This is CD number 6, containing session 7, Create Outreach Opportunities and Putting It All Together.
Well, as we enter into this session, we want to just review for just a minute and say that what we've looked at today is this. We've looked at developing a whole environment of powerful prayer that is passionate. We invite in the presence of God. We bring His presence into our midst. And then within that, we stand right in the middle of that. And when we stand in the middle of it, then we say, how do I go deeper in my intimacy with Christ, my own personal relationship with Christ? Out of the depth of that relationship, then how do I begin to gather other people around me as I'm growing as a believer and deepening my own walk with Christ? How do I get other people around me who want to do the same, have the same kind of relationship? So how do I build leaders? How do I invest in those people and disciple them as adults? And then how do those adults then disciple kids? How then do those kids then reach out to their friends and we begin to penetrate the culture? Me as the youth pastor being sort of the point of the spear, and as the point of the spear then me bringing my kids behind me in order to penetrate their culture, their friends, where they go to school every day. And then that brings us to the last principle that we're talking about here today, and that is then it's sort of the icing on the cake. How do we then bring about outreach events where kids have an opportunity to bring their friends to hear the gospel of Christ? And that's really what we're looking at here for the next few minutes, creating outreach opportunities. So we can say this for sure. The event is only as good as the process. The process is what we walk through week by week. It's what we do in building leaders. It's what we do in discipling. It's what we do with kids week by week. We do an event. What's the purpose of that event? The purpose of that event is always to elevate the process. Oftentimes in youth ministry, instead of elevating the process, we actually depreciate, take away from the process because we're just scheduling this activity, that activity, and we're not sure exactly why we're going to this concert or why we're having this particular thing. We hope some non-Christian kids will come, but we're not really sure, and we haven't got the process clearly defined, and so as a result, instead of taking us up a notch, it actually either just keeps us at the same level or takes us down a level. So, if we do it that way in the negative sense of just putting together events and activities and outreaches that don't really reach that many non-Christian kids, or we're just doing activities and hoping that non-Christians come, then the result of that is the kids come in the front door and out the back door, and we can't figure out, even if they come to a place where they respond to Christ, 3 weeks later we can't find them, we don't know where they are, because we haven't really developed the process. So all day long we've been talking about how you develop a process that makes sense so that now when we have an outreach event, that outreach event really fits properly into its place. Now we can discuss events and know that those events make sense. I think I've seen all those. I've seen, and I've spoken to all of them, anywhere from a teen-o-rama with about 10 kids where no non-Christian showed up, but it was supposed to be an outreach event. And, of course, you can take that name and figure out probably why that one failed. But from a teen-o-rama to speaking 25,000 kids in a stadium where God just did some awesome things and everything in between, I think I've seen just about every event. And events have a place, but events have a limited place in youth ministry, and it's not really the heart of what we do, but it does help us to move the process from one level to another. One of the reasons, I'll tell you honestly, why I'm still in youth ministry today is because I gave up lock-ins at an early age. I did one and then didn't ever do another one, and swore off those forever. And so as a result of that, I'm still here after all these years. I commend it to you, by the way. I'd say if you're doing lock-ins, give it up. Okay, so let's see if we can answer one question here. And I want to see if we can answer this question in a way that will create outreach opportunities that will honor Christ by producing fruit. And that fruit would be fruit that remains. That's what we want to see happen. So here's the question. It's there in your little handout. How do we present Jesus through culturally relevant outreach opportunities to which kids bring their non-believing friends. There are four characteristics that answer that question. When we look at the New Testament, we see how Jesus created outreach opportunities. There are four characteristics that stand out in the way he did that. Here they are. Number one, Jesus was the focus of attention. Mark 1:1-45. If you look over at Mark chapter 1, we see the man with leprosy. The man with leprosy came to him, begged him on his knees, "Will you make me clean?" Jesus was filled with compassion. He reached out to the man, he touched him, made him clean. He was immediately healed, he was cured. Told the man not to say anything. The man took off and began immediately to talk about Jesus. and it says here that he began to talk freely, spreading the news. And then as a result of that, Jesus could no longer enter a town openly, but stayed outside in lonely places. Yet the people still came to him from everywhere. There was always a crowd around Jesus. Jesus was the focus of attention. Second thing that we see here, the second characteristic about a large group, crowd-oriented outreach event opportunity. The crowds were filled with enthusiasm. Mark chapter 4, verse 1 says this. It says, "Again, Jesus began to teach by the lake. The crowd that gathered around him was so large that he got into a boat and sat in it out on the lake while all the people were along the shore at the water's edge." Again, a bit of humor in here as we look at Jesus and what the circumstance was. He's teaching, he's preaching. There are people who are responding to him. They are enthusiastically wanting to get close to him. And as a result of trying to get close to him, there's just sort of this loss of crowd control, and people are just moving him backwards. And eventually he's at the water's edge, and so that he doesn't fall into the lake, one of his disciples pulls a boat around, and he jumps into the boat and he stands there and teaches from off of the ledge of the boat. So the second thing we see here then is that Jesus was the focus of attention, number one, and then the crowds were filled with enthusiasm. And I think we can say, in light of our youth ministry, one of the things we want to make sure we got clear in our minds is that when we're doing outreach events, these are not events for deacons, and they're not events for elders. Okay, we're doing this with a focus on kids. And oftentimes, one of the reasons that outreach events don't really fly is because we're trying to please the people in the church, we're trying to please kids, and we get some kind of cross between that doesn't really relate at either level. And as a result of that, we don't have crowds of kids that come filled with enthusiasm. Truthfully, if we're going to have a meeting for kids and an outreach opportunity for kids, then it's probably not going to be your average church meeting, especially if you're trying to reach out to non-Christian kids and especially to alternative kids. Third thing that we see here, the third characteristic of an outreach event from the New Testament, is that believers wanted to bring their non-believing friends to meet Jesus. We see that in Luke 5:27-29. Jesus is in this encounter with Levi, the tax collector. Jesus calls him, and it changes Levi's life forever. He got up, he left everything, he followed Jesus. Levi throws a party, he invites all of his other sinner friends, and they come. And Jesus is having a big time with the sinners. Now, you know, the Pharisees weren't real happy about that. In fact, they got their undies in a real tight wad. They could not figure out why Jesus would want to hang out with sinners. Couldn't figure it out. And you can be sure of this, that religious folks will not look with favor on long-haired, tattooed, pierced, smoking, cursing kids coming to their church, because they'll say, "One of those guys wants to date my daughter." And I think we're up against that in a real serious way today in terms of the church culture and the walls that are around the church that are really actually keeping kids outside from coming to know Jesus and being able to get inside the church, and from all of us who are inside the church who really want to reach kids outside from really being able to reach outside the walls of the church and bring kids in. Believers wanted to bring their non-believing friends to meet Jesus. Is that a characteristic of your church? Do believers in your church want to bring non-believing friends to meet Jesus. Well, number four, fourth characteristics, lives were changed forever. When you look over at Matthew chapter 20, just turn over there with me, Matthew chapter 20, verses 29 through 34, you see a pretty significant thing that takes place. Jesus and his disciples were leaving Jericho, and a large crowd followed him. Again, we've got the large crowd scenario here. Two blind men were sitting by the roadside, and when they heard that Jesus was going by, they shouted, "Lord, Son of David, have mercy on us." And the crowd rebuked them, sent them away, "Be quiet." And louder, they called out, "Lord, Son of David, have mercy on us." Jesus stopped and he called them. He said, "What do you want me to do for you?" And it's pretty obvious. "We want our sight." And the scripture says here, Jesus had compassion on them and touched their eyes, and immediately they received their sight and they followed him. One of many, many, many illustrations of how Jesus touched a person's life, and that life was changed forever, both either physical healing or demonic deliverance or touching someone's spirit, and they really, like the woman at the well who just saw Jesus as the Son of God and gave her life to them. So when we look at this, we see four characteristics that out of probably more characteristics than that, but four things that we can point out and say, you know, if we're going to do outreach events, then those outreach events will look something like this. They'll have a focus of attention on Jesus. There will be kids who are coming who are enthusiastic because they're believing kids who are enthusiastic. There are kids who are going to be coming enthusiastic about meeting and knowing Jesus. There will be kids who will come and want to bring their non-believing friends to Jesus and probably have to get through some barriers at the church in order to be able to do that. And then kids' lives will be changed forever as a result of meeting Jesus when they come to one of these events. Kids' lives will be changed forever. There are kids that you know already through your ministry that whose lives have been changed because they came to some event and met Christ and gave their hearts and lives to him. I mean, even as I'm sitting here now, I'm thinking about all kinds of kids that I've, you know, spoken to in a large group and then got to know those kids on a personal basis. And they'll say to me, that's when I gave my heart to Jesus. That's when I gave my life to Jesus, and it changed me forever. And so we all know that to be the case. Two perspectives I want to give us here. Now that we've looked at those four characteristics, let's look at two perspectives that I think will help us to see how these outreach events fit in the context of our church situation. For an optimum impact on the lives of students, we can view these perspectives through two, like we're looking through binoculars, okay, through two lenses of binoculars. Here's the first lens. The first lens is this, is that outreach events continue, even as we talked about all day, to have a focus on Jesus. Jesus-focused youth ministry, Jesus-focused outreach events. The point of the outreach is to help students experience Jesus. One student, watch this now, one student who encounters Christ makes it a worthwhile outreach. It's easy to lose that perspective, and I want us to see this. This is really important to catch. It's easy to lose that perspective. If one student encounters Christ, then that made the event worthwhile. It's not the size of the event that counts, although oftentimes our thinking goes to that. And if we think we've got more kids, then we think we've had a more successful event. Not necessarily so. Maybe so, maybe not. Success is not measured by numbers, but by helping students encounter Christ. If we can have more numbers and have more students encounter Christ, then so much the better. But if we have an outreach event and one student encounters Christ, that made it worthwhile. So, what does an outreach event look like? I mean, it can be something that's absolutely huge, 25,000 kids, or it can be a group of 10 kids, and there are a couple of non-Christian comes, and one kid receives Christ. In a relationship-oriented, relationally-oriented culture that our kids are growing up in and have an affinity for today, that's probably more of the likelihood of what's taking place rather than some big, huge event where kids come and they respond in sort of a crusade kind of concert kind of manner. So first lens, focus on Jesus. Large event, small event, doesn't really matter. That's not what we're talking about here. The size of it, we're talking about having a focus on Jesus and that being the one thing that makes a difference. Secondly, the second lens that we're looking through these binoculars is knowing the purpose, of the event or of the outreach. When you have a clear purpose, you will avoid the "what do I come up with to entertain these kids next" syndrome. Okay, let me say that for us again. When we have a clear purpose, we'll avoid the "what do I come up with to entertain these kids next" syndrome. For each outreach, it's important for you to have a clearly stated purpose for that outreach. Otherwise, you sort of lose sight of the target, you lose sight of what you're doing. It's very important, I think, in terms of my own experience, to say, what kind of kids are we targeting? Who are the kids that we're targeting? What is our target audience? And then in design, everything flows out from that to say, this is what we're going to do as a result of doing this, because we know who, what our purpose is, and we know who our target audience is. And once you get past getting down that purpose, I mean, you've got so many different things that you can do. I mean, you've got options out the wazoo, all kinds of stuff. You've got things like skits and singing and games and competitions and crowd breakers, and you've got announcements that you can do creatively and make fun, dramas and media and films and testimony and music and a message and invitation and counseling afterwards and follow-up and da-da-da-da. You've got all these different things that you can do. There's so many different ingredients and elements. No way you can do all those every time you do one of these, but you're saying, okay, with all these elements that are at my disposal, now out of my purpose, what do I do to bring that outreach event to a place where kids really can see Christ and focus on Him and get to know Him and really be changed forever? Well, with those two binocular lenses hopefully in focus here, I want to show you five options that come out of this in terms of doing an event that I think makes sense when we're preparing for an outreach. So let's say you're getting ready to do an outreach. You're saying, okay, I want to do this outreach. I think it'll help our process. It fits into the whole flow of our ministry. We're process-oriented, not event-oriented, but we're going to use this event to elevate the process. All right? We've got that clearly in our minds. Now, what are my options? I got several. One is I can borrow this event, okay? The principle here is there's nothing new under the sun, according to Ecclesiastes 1:9. And so we learn from other outreaches that we attend. We borrow a set from the community play. We get speakers who are coming from another church. We watch. We learn. We simply borrow what somebody else has done. We borrow it. We learn how to do the event by borrowing from somebody else. Secondly, we create it. Sure, it's harder to create it. A lot more effort goes into that, and you can expend some incredible amounts of energy putting an event on, and as all of us know. But the reward of that is that we get our youth workers involved, we get our students involved, they begin to own it, they get in a room, they brainstorm an event. It's never happened before, and the principle comes into play of people support what they create. There's a lot of value in creating the event from scratch and giving our kids and our youth leaders ownership of it. Number three, the third one is we buy it. Okay, several individuals and groups have ready-made programs that they'd gladly bring to your church. All right, college student organizations have teams of students who come. They'll do the entire outreach, but so you're going to have to preview those groups and get endorsement from several other youth leaders or go see them yourself before you do that. But that's another option for us, that option being the one in which we actually buy it. We just hire people to come in and do the outreach event for us. Then we join it, okay? This is a great one. I think we can save lots of time, energy, and money by jumping on this bandwagon here. We join it. There's concerts, there are ball games, there are other opportunities that we can utilize to accomplish our outreach purposes without having to invent something ourselves every time. The obvious benefit of that is you avoid all the logistical hassles that go with planning an outreach. And yet you have to kind of see, does this really fit my purpose? Are we able to follow up? Are we able to do some things that are really going to make sense for really meeting the needs of the kids who go to this thing? So we join it. We rent it, number five. Many times it's more feasible to rent something rather than to buy it. We get a small amusement park. We get miniature golf course. We get a swimming pool, a gymnasium. We get ice rinks and a theater, any of those kinds of things that we can rent, that we just rent it out and say, okay, we're going to do our event here, and we rent it. So those are a number of options that we have for developing an outreach event. Now, let's think of the words 425. Just say that with me, 425. Say it with me, 425. Four characteristics, two perspectives, five options that we've been through, and then when you're thinking about 425, basically there are certain decisions that have to be made by you and your team in light of 425, the things that we've discussed. Four characteristics, two options, and then all the different elements of ways that we can, five options by which we can do an outreach event. Then we have a solid foundation for a creative outreach. Now, with that in mind, let me give you a few practical steps and then we're done. In terms of the practical steps, think about it this way. Get your ducks in a row, all right? If you're going to do an outreach event and you're going to do it in a way that focuses attention on Jesus, brings non-believing kids, creates enthusiasm for on the part of kids toward Christ, and then changes kids' lives forever, then we have to get our ducks in a row. And to bring practical creativity into our planning process, and this is the real kind of the practical step here of getting our ducks in a row. If you're going to do an outreach, here's the way to think it through. And all this, by the way, has been laid out in a book we're doing right now called The Magnet Effect, Designing Outreach Opportunities That Draw Kids to Christ. And that book will have about 200 pages of expanding all the things that we're talking about here in order for you to be able to do this. But here's one practical idea out of there that I think will help you. It's called storyboarding. Lots of people have used this method in the past. Maybe you've used it. People in business use it all the time. But we write each outreach opportunity idea on a 4x6 post-it note, and we tack it up on the board under the following categories, okay? So you got a room full of kids, some of your adults, whatever, and you're planning this thing out, and we're having a storyboarding session here. And here are some of the elements that you consider. Purpose. What is the one specific purpose of this outreach opportunity? Purpose. Number two is target. Who is the specific audience? Number three, theme. What is the specific theme? Number four, goals. What are the specific goals? Ideas. And this is really where storyboarding becomes quite creative and the brainstorming really gets going here. But what are the creative program ideas? We can bring kids into this, students into this, and then they give their creative ideas around the first four elements here of purpose, target, theme, and goals. Then there are all kinds of ideas, and then we narrow that down to probably four or five of the best ones, and then we begin to design the outreach around those four or five best ideas. Number six is resources. What are the specific resources that are going to be needed? Number seven is production. What will the program look like? Who will be responsible for what and by when? And that's where it becomes really hard. But by storyboarding, each of those seven questions will discover our most creative ideas, and we'll have a trough, so to speak, a channel by which we can run this thing, a way in which we get our ducks in a row and say, okay, here's a logical process for working this out. And then, not only do we need to get our ducks in a row, but we need to lead all of our ducks into the same direction. To keep all of our leaders, our parents, our students moving in the same direction, we keep our purposes and goals before them. Okay, we put them out there. We put the goal statement up in the room where we plan. We put the goal statement up when we're doing our storyboarding. We keep that in front of people all the time so that, again, those two lenses, focus on Jesus, knowing our purpose, are constantly in view of all the people that we're working with, parents, students, the volunteers. all those people, each of our audiences, they have a clear perspective on why we're doing this outreach event and how that thing is going to work. Okay, now, one final thing, and then we'll wrap this up. The final thing that I want to say to you is just talk a second about the tool, the Magnet Effect book, Designing Outreach Opportunities That Draw Kids to Christ. And what we've done in that is we have, in that book, set the book up so that we take people through a brief understanding of Jesus-focused youth ministry. We then help them build a strategy around that. And then once they've done that and kind of moved along until they've developed a whole foundation for their ministry, then we help them begin to do things in outreach events that really make sense. How do you market the event? How do you communicate this event to people outside the church? How do we do word of mouth? How do we do little flyers? How do we do things to get into the school, et cetera, all those kinds of things? How do we mobilize students to have ownership in that event? If we don't mobilize them to have ownership, then the result is that we end up with nobody coming to the event. Not only the non-Christians don't come, but the Christians don't come as well. And that's what we'd call a serious flop. Okay? Then we plan the program, and then we carry out the program. And in this book, The Magnet Effect, we show how to do that. In fact, we developed a thing in that book. It's about a 20-25-page outreach event planner, an outreach opportunity planner that takes you through every step of doing this so that you can say, all right, as a person who's got to plan an event week after week with my youth group, as a person who has to plan an event once a month, or I'm responsible for putting this outreach event together, here is a whole series of questions and tools, templates that I can use to kind of put this event together in a way that carries out the 4-2-5 idea that we've just been talking about. Every aspect of this has kind of been thought out for you so that you've got a way to get your ducks in a row, but also how to get those ducks to move all in the same direction as far as getting them going where they need to go and getting people involved at a level that they need to get involved in. So with that in mind, I think we simply stop here and have a little discussion about this here in just a little bit. Well, Matt Brinkley is with me right here, and thanks, Matt, for being a part of this whole process through this whole set of tapes, and now we're on the last little segment here. I really appreciate you being a part of all that, and thanks for everything you've said. As we jump into this last segment here, we're talking about creating outreach opportunities, and the whole idea is how to present Jesus through culturally relevant outreach opportunities to which people, young people, parents, volunteers, youth pastors, and so forth, bring their non-believing friends. And so as we focus on that, let's talk about how that works. How do we present culturally relevant outreach opportunities to which people bring their non-Christian friends? Kind of give us a broad overview of what you've done with that over the years.
Well, one of the things, Barry, that I think about as we've already presented in the tapes prior to this are that this is the topping on the cake in many ways. And many youth ministries, they're driven by the outreach event itself or by the big event, so to speak. And what we've already talked about in regards to building leadership teams and investing in the lives of adults, their lives, investing in the lives of students, and the whole process of discipling, nurturing, all of that, the outreach events become an outlet or an opportunity. It's a place where students are in place to use their gifts and their talents to provide a place where their passions and their hearts can touch the lost world, touch their friends for Christ. It's a place of impact, a place where we look out and we say, okay, what are the felt needs of students in the community? And we know, of course, every student minister knows that fun and fellowship are a big drive for kids to come and get themselves involved in events in the community. As student pastors, we look out and say, well, we not only want to provide fun and fellowship, but we want to provide places where students can be impacted with the good news of Jesus Christ and that they can be nurtured, that they can be integrated, drawn in our student ministries and become reproducers for the kingdom. So the question comes in, of how do you bring together those felt needs and those real needs and bring an impact event. And that really is what we're talking about here, that collision course or that impact event that you're referring to as an outreach event.
As you're saying that, an interesting comment or insight that just as you were speaking is that so many times what happens is that in youth ministry, we do events for an event's sake. And an event really is only as good as the process. So all the things we've been talking about before sort of lead up to this point. If you just do events for an event process, that fun, that fellowship, that connection, even the presenting of the gospel doesn't have really an inflow and then an outflow. But the event really makes sense when it's connected to a process and elevates that process by doing the event. So as I was thinking about that, it seems like to me and the whole philosophy and strategy that we've been presenting here is a philosophy and strategy that takes now an event and hooks it up to some other meaningful things so that that event now has meaning in itself. And it's not just an activity that's on a calendar that's planned because some parent wanted it or because some youth pastor saw it somewhere else or because some kid needs to be entertained, but it's there for the purpose of really helping that process that we've been through. Yeah, comments on that?
No, sure. Putting it into the proper place or in the connection where it will complement what has already been built on the foundational levels, again, giving an outreach opportunity to students, again, use their heart, their gifts, their talents, their passions to reach the lost world for Christ, therefore feeding them because they're using their gifts and talents, and, of course, reaching the lost world because it is students who bring students to events. As much as we try as student pastors to go out and advertise and communicate and let people know things, and we want to do it slick and sharp, and that's good, and we want to do that with excellence, the truth is we all know that students come because other students bring them. And so this putting together this outreach event as, again, an outlet or opportunity for these kids to use those gifts and talents is phenomenal. And usually when we've done that, there really isn't a difficulty in getting students to bring friends because they own it.
Let's go back there. Let's go back to two aspects of that, which I think really seem important to me at least. One is the student leadership involvement, and then the other one is getting kids to bring their friends. In your experience over the years, what is that really, as a youth leader, what kind of opportunities did you provide for kids to get into the leadership? And then the second part of that question is then what would motivate a kid who's not on the program or not up front or anything, what motivates them to bring their friends?
I think maybe sharing a little bit of a story quickly here would help in filling in some of those answers. Back a number of years ago, 11 years ago, when I came to the church that I'm currently in as a student pastor, our students I was very encouraged because they were being nurtured and had grown in discipleship, and adult leaders were investing life to life, and that was exciting. We wanted to keep building on that. But one of the things that we noted is that they were sitting and soaking rather than really being challenged and encouraged to use those gifts and talents to reach the lost world for Christ. And so after being there for about 8 months, building relationships, getting to know the territory, earning the right to be heard with the students, began spending time individually with students, just casting a vision of what it might be like, listening to them of what it might be like on ways to touch the lost community, and began to birth the idea that they would be the ones that would be within the program, would be the ones that would be sharing their faith. They would be the ones that would be doing the music and doing the drama and doing the video photography and doing the outreach and all the advertising, everything that goes with it. And I'll tell you right up front, initially as I began to talk among the students about that, they were very hesitant. In fact, most of them were saying, hey, we really can't do it as well as the adults are doing it here. We don't really have much to offer. They were afraid. And I remember those days very well in my own life where there was a fear and concern of being put especially up in front of my peers. And So we began to share that vision and that heart with the students, and the students very hesitantly got involved, and we created a music team, and we created a drama team, and a video photography team. We created a communication team, and anyway, there were 8 teams that were created. Adult leaders came in, just like we did with discipleship, and they nurtured those kids, shared with those students, helped them develop, and we were off and running and had a big event scheduled, and we were thrilled about the big event, and we encouraged students, bring your friends, and so sure enough, the students invited friends, but when myself and an intern that was working with me, we that evening when everyone was there and we looked out, we were very disappointed that there were only 2 visitors at that big event. And so as the event went on...
I'm sure that was disappointing.
Well, it was. We were expecting our core students, about 45 or 50 senior high students. We were hoping that we would at least double that for that event. And we had put hours and hours, days and days into everything we could do to initiate and excite. And we wanted the students to sense ownership from what they were doing. But only 2 students showed up that were visitors. As I look back at that, it makes sense. A student needs to experience something before they're going to get really fired up. They want to test it themselves before they're going to bring friends. Mm. But anyway, the event went on. And not to prolong the story too long, but to make a point, the event went on. The music team, the student got up, the hospitality student got up, the MC, and introduced and explained what the evening was about. Once that was over, the music team got up, and we had 2 type of musicians. One were the rock and roll band kids, and the other were kids that were in their band at school, playing the tuba and, you know, other instruments. So we ended up putting together 2 programs of music. And so anyway, one of the music teams got up, and I'll be really honest with you, they were horrible. I mean, you would listening to them in regards to their ability to do music, it was horrible. And yet, when they got through doing the song, the student body literally stood up and cheered them. And then we moved to a drama, and we had a little skit put together, and very, very simplistic, fun little skit. And while they were a little better than the music team was, but it was not by
very
any
simple.
Means done with excellence. They did their best, but again, the student body applauded that and got up and applauded. Then we had 4 students get up who each shared a bit of the gospel of Christ. And they shared Christ with the students, each having their bit and their little piece in doing that. Each did a good job at communicating their little 3-minute segment. They got through doing that. We had an invitation. And of all things, the Lord bless the 2 students that had visited with us, both prayed to receive Jesus Christ that night. The next week, the 6 weeks later, when we did the next big event, we had 110 students at the next big event.
Wow. That's amazing. One of the things that occurs to me in that is pretty phenomenal is, and I think this is for lots of youth pastors out there who kind of lead the whole thing, is that if I, as a youth pastor, stand up in front of those students, then I'd better be really, really good because they're there watching, making sure that I, you know, if I make a mistake, they'll laugh, those kinds of things. But when kids get up, their peers, who they know, if they were there, they would be fearful of being up there or doing those kinds of things. When they get up and even do a horrible job, they tend to love it and are very, very forgiving of those kinds of things.
And no doubt about that. And yet we don't want to set up a scenario where we suggest that adults don't have a place to get up and communicate.
Or that you do things with lack of excellence.
No, not at all.
No.
But we do know as student pastors in this culture, and I suppose cultures in the past, yet not as noticed, I think, by student pastors, that students are going to impact students more than any adult's ever going to impact a student.
Yeah.
So the power of that peer power that comes with that is phenomenal.
Well, that's a good word. And then let's go to the second part of my question, which is then, okay, so you had 110 students come the next time. How come?
Well, obviously the students had experienced the overflow of seeing that together as a body of believers that they had stepped out in faith, and they were scared. They were frightened at that first big event. They had stepped out in faith and had seen God move through their lives. It wasn't as though they were in the crowd and watched adults lead their friends to Christ. They had participated in leading their friends to Christ. And so the next big event, when now there were 55 visitors that came, they wanted to invite their friends because they had had the experience, had seen God move in and through their lives. They were proud of it.
Yeah. And I suppose, too, along with that is the fact that now they had tested it out. It was theirs. They were owning it. But in addition to owning it, they also knew to some degree that bringing their friends would not be embarrassed by coming there.
Absolutely.
And it seems like lots of times that when we design outreach opportunities for kids as adults, the result of that is sometimes kids don't bring their friends. In fact, that happens lots of times. And oftentimes I think we wonder why. And oftentimes the answer to that is simply because kids would be embarrassed to bring their friends to an event that an adult planned, or that they don't know what's going to happen, or that they're not comfortable in terms of owning that or feeling comfortable in the midst of that.
Yeah, I agree. I couldn't agree more there. And, of course, there are all kinds of outreach events. I mean, I've seen over 25 years of student ministry, I have participated in and gone to events.
Just about every kind there is.
You name it. I remember one youth pastor told me that one of the largest evangelistic events that he had ever put together came by way of announcing in the community a month in advance that he had a piano that had been donated to the church, and they rented a crane. I don't know whether it was 60 or 80 feet high, but it was very, very high above the parking lot of their church. And the word got in the community that they were going to hoist up this piano up to the top of that crane, and the event was to drop that piano down into the parking lot. And it ended up that this student pastor, I don't think, had ever had more than 75 or 80 kids, students in at his church. And this particular week, he had hundreds upon hundreds of students and adults who came out, and they watched them hoist this piano to the top and drop it down to the ground. And he had taken the good news of Christ and talked about broken lives as trying to draw together some purpose and why you drop a piano, and we get desperate sometimes. But he did that, and it ended up that many, many students prayed to receive Christ, and students used that. They were excited about bringing their friends something. So it can be as goofy as that all the way to something that is as elaborate as a student-driven opportunity.
Well, I think that's a good segue to the next part of what we want to talk about here, and that is there are all kinds of outreach events, and it's maybe large, but an event doesn't necessarily mean that it's 1,000 people or 500 people or even 200 people. I mean, it could be 20 people who come or 10 people who come. If two or three of them are non-Christians and those people come and they have a positive response to the message of Jesus, then it's been a successful outreach. I think lots of times we think that you got to have lots of numbers to make it work. You got to have a 6-week preparation time to make it work. Oftentimes an outreach event can be almost a spontaneous thing if it's done with a targeted specific purpose in mind. And that is to, as we said before, present Jesus in a culturally relevant manner and in a situation where non-Christians can come and believers can bring their friends. Your response to that? How do you see that in terms of the kinds of outreach events you've seen, and the way youth leaders can go about doing this?
Well, I think that one of the things that you're hitting on and underlining a core principle of a ministry that would follow after the work of Christ, a Jesus-focused type of student ministry. The core of evangelism really is not putting on events and students bringing lost friends. The core of evangelism is the ministry to the life of an individual student, life-to-life investment. And in that relationship, through demonstration of your own life as a leader and demonstration through the lips, through teaching them the truth of the Word of God and the work of Christ, teaching them how to share the good news of Christ and giving them the tools that they need to personally win their friends to Christ. I mean, that's the ultimate, that they graduate out of high school and that they have learned and experienced sharing their faith, praying for fellow students, sharing their faith one-on-one, and prayerfully, maybe even led someone to Christ by the time they're graduating from high school personally. I mean, that is the ideal world. That is really how we know that evangelism is going to be reproduced across the world. However, and we look at all kinds of ways to draw crowds and to win students to Christ. And so you move into these various events, everything from buttons, balloons, and baloney, 90% event that has the gospel tagged on top of it, like the piano story, you know, all the way to looking at culturally relevant issues of felt needs of students, the pain they're going through, the challenge they're going through. Adult speakers speaking to the deeper issues of students and tapping into the heart of a student, them seeing that the Bible is applicable to the real needs, the real things they're going through, expositing the Scripture in such a way as that it captures their heart and it excites them and makes them look and say, well, if the Bible is true, then I want to know more about this. I want to know more about this Jesus that rescues, this Jesus of hope. And so it can be from one extreme to the other with Jesus being the centerpiece.
Absolutely. I appreciate that a lot because I think really the truth is you can go from one extreme to the other, up and down the scale. It's a huge expanse of opportunities for outreach events. That's one of the things that makes it so tricky in the sense of where do you land? How do you, you know, where do you go with it? In a sense, it almost doesn't matter that under all that is the question, do we have in place the things that are going to support this event? Do our kids, are they motivated so that it's not just me out there as a youth pastor carrying the flag, passing out the flyers and saying, hey, y'all come, but it's more of kids owning that event and not only owning it, but seeing themselves as a witness around it, utilizing their opportunities to invite their friends, which is a tremendous way for kids to share their faith. I mean, it gives them an easy opening to bring their friends into an event like this. I think, you know, there are kids, like in the adult world, there are kids who have the gift of evangelism, and they do this pretty easily. But there are a lot of kids who are shy and don't do it all that easily. And so I think one of the things that happens with an event is we do have an opportunity, no matter whatever the broad expanse of that event is, to give kids an opportunity for ownership, for entrance as Christian kids, as for entrance into a ministry that's as simple as inviting a friend to come, and all the way to the point of actually leading a friend to Christ while they're there.
Absolutely. It provides a stage so that they, even if they're not yet equipped, but yet have the passion, they are struggling with fear of the challenge, and yet they still have a heart to pray for their friend. It gives them a place to bring that friend, knowing they're going to hear the good news. And, yeah, and they are participating in that process of winning their friend to Christ. I would also underline here the vital importance, and again, not any new news to any student pastor, but the vital importance of prayer, of youth pastors teaching students how to really seek the heart of God through prayer, through lifting up the names of students. And it's amazing to me to see how once we begin to establish triplets, so to speak, in the reach out language, establishing relationships of prayer with one another, and each one of those students, three students, praying for three more students and looking around them, who sits in front of me, back of me, beside me in school, who's in my PE class, who's on my swimming team, whatever the relationship is, as we encourage students, begin to pray for students by name, it's amazing how God will touch the heart. He does it in my own life, touches my heart with a greater passion than ever to take bold steps, to take steps that I would not naturally take, to want to share the good news of Christ with them, or certainly at least get them to an event where they'll hear the good news of Christ.
That's great. That brings back, you know, we've been going through all these different things that we've been working on, you know, the whole prayer element of this and the discipleship element and all those things. All that comes back to play here. In a very vital way, in the sense that just what you mentioned, this whole prayer thing and kids increasing their compassion quotient, taking a relational risk with their friends to invite them to an event or to mention the name of Jesus or to actually share the gospel with a friend. And the event gives an excuse, in quotes, an excuse to be able to do that. because and an opening for kids to be able to do it, because it gives them what they need to be able to say, you know, there's something going on here. There's a focus here that allows me to open my mouth in regard to these things, or to extend myself in regard to this particular thing that's coming up. I think at that point, the value of an event can be seen for the true value of the event, rather than just something hanging out there that's got stuck on the calendar and we're just doing it, putting lots of energy and don't know where kids are coming from, and when they come, we don't know where they're going. The event then takes on very, very meaningful significance as far as kids' lives are concerned. Well, Matt, just turning the subject just a little bit, let's go back to one of the phrases that we used in the whole purpose of an outreach opportunity, and that is culturally relevant. In your view, what does that mean?
Well, there'd be a couple of things I'd speak to there, and it's something that the area that I have to be very attuned to, being the age that I am now, almost 48 years old, and the things that I may sense as cultural relevant is not what a student might sense at all. There's some things that I certainly noted in the lives of kids over the last few years. One is, and to be honest with you, this has always been a tender spot for me personally, but to be real and vulnerable. The student today, they are not turned on by a show at all. They're very encouraged by someone being real, by someone speaking from the heart. They don't even mind what we're talking about earlier, what you and I would call excellence coming from our walk of life, which is important. We're not saying that things shouldn't be done excellently, but even in our excellence, to have places that are not quite as put together as perfectly,
polished,
that's a great word. That is not that important to the student. They would rather have a situation where they know that this person up in front of me is real. They're like I am.
So culturally relevant is speaking to real life issues.
Yeah, and it's a little bit frightening to even think that it's ever been different than that. But I will have to admit that there is a bit of showmanship. We all can find ourselves guilty of that in ministry. And students are looking for someone to share their heart, to share the real issues, the real needs, the real things going on in them. They don't want to be preached at. They want to be discussed with.
There's a church in California that had a recent outreach, and they very interestingly set up a worship event where they put all the Christian kids in the middle of the room. And for weeks, these kids who are highly motivated in their walk with Christ invited their friends to come and watch them worship. Now, isn't that fascinating? I mean, who would have ever thought of that being a culturally relevant outreach event? But hundreds of kids came, and all kinds of students came to know Christ as a result of that event that night. Well, that's a culturally relevant event there.
Well, and I think
in some other place, someplace in on the East Coast, that may have gone over like a lead balloon kind of thing.
Well, possibly, but I think you're tapping into another issue for these students. They are looking for experiential. They want to participate, and they want to see others that are participating in their experiences. They don't want to just be a hearsay generation. They want to be an experiential generation. They're not satisfied. They get bored with just information. They want to explore. They want to relate. They want to be a part of. Again, I'm not sure that it was any different 30 years ago, but the fact is that this generation is crying out for it.
It's way more pronounced, simply because I think, personally, because of the pain the kids have that causes them to have to face realities and face issues in their lives, and because they really are relationally driven, maybe because of the lack of that in the family, those are the kinds of things I think that bring this out, almost highlight it and put it in a neon sign for today. I think that is so good, and I think too, just to wrap up this little element of our discussion, I think too, as we think about this from a church related point of view, it's very, very easy for churches, and particularly youth ministries that have tended to stay within the four walls of the church, when they plan an outreach event, to put so much Christianese, to put so much Christian language, so much of things that relate to the Christian culture but not to the non-Christian culture, that it's really, really important to kind of think through the terms you use, the way you're doing things, and actually almost set up a target and say, okay, here is the target, and here's one student that is that target, and this is what the student looks like, and what we're going to do is build our outreach event to target that student, to get to the heart of, to dig into the emotions of, to get into the mind of that particular student, and thinking of it that way rather than just saying, whoa, boy, this is fun, or this is cool, or this is what we like, or whatever, but to think about it from that non-Christian student's point of view.
It would seem to me that you're tapping in to the very mind of Christ as he was culturally relevant to perfection. And if you look at the way he dealt with different people from different people groups, the power of storytelling and relating with them in their world and understanding their situations, it's exciting to see how Christ did that. So I think, again, we have what a great picture to look back at the Gospels and to see the way that Jesus went about his ministry life to life as well as with large crowds, but always culturally relevant, both in his application of encouragement and at times his applications of exhortation and discipline. But he was culturally relevant, really, really tapping into the minds and hearts of the people he was around.
Boy, that's a great way for us to close this thing out. I appreciate your input here. One of the things that I would just say, just in wrapping up, taking all this kind of full circle in a sense, is to come back to the whole idea that the focus here in the event, in the outreach opportunity, is Jesus. And if he is not presented, if he is not brought to the fore, if he is not the focus, then we've really not only lost that opportunity, but we've expended lots of energy that probably didn't even need to be expended. It doesn't mean that we always have to present him the same way or have people respond the same way, but that in that outreach, he becomes the focus of everything that we're doing. And that takes us back to where we started in our earlier discussion, and that is that the event is only as good as the process. And if the process is focused on Jesus all the way along, and we come to this event then the event itself, because of the students who have been prayed for and prayed over and kids who have been discipled and kids who are growing and adults who are involved, all of them having a Jesus focus, then when we get to this event, it's going to have a Jesus focus. And in it, he's going to be glorified.
Absolutely. Overflow.
Overflow. Heart of Christ. Absolutely. Right. Thanks, brother, for being here.
Hey, thank you, Barry.
Now that we've completed the CDs, let's put the final touch here, what I call putting it all together. Let me give you one illustration of one youth pastor who did this and see if this resonates with you. One youth pastor went through the Jesus-focused youth ministry training, and he'd done the plan of action for each session. He set aside a day to bring it all together. He put butcher paper up around the walls of his office. He wrote down all the activities that he was currently doing and how those activities fit the principles of Jesus-focused youth ministry. Then he rewrote his entire plan of action, clearly stated what needed to change, and how he planned to change it, using the information at the back of the kit. As he was reviewing the Going Deeper with Christ segment, he remembered that there were some relationships that he had committed himself to reconcile. He had conveniently put that off. The Lord convicted him of that. He dropped what he was doing there and went to some people and asked forgiveness and followed through on the lordship issues. Then he wrote a 2-page vision paper when he got back based on his plan of action. He went over it with his pastor when he'd completed it, and as soon as he had his pastor's approval, he set up a leaders retreat for his volunteers and parents. On that retreat, he began by telling about his Jesus-focused youth ministry experience and his experience of straightening out these broken relationships. When he went through the section called Going Deeper with Christ, the Holy Spirit stepped into that meeting and literally revival broke out in that meeting. People began to confess their sins. They wept. They prayed for one another. At the end of that retreat, all 17 people who had gone on the retreat signed up to become a part of his leadership team.
It may not work that smoothly for you, no problem. But I think as you follow some of these simple guidelines, you'll understand how to take this from where you are now with all that you've learned to where you want this to be. Let me offer these suggestions to you. Number one, prepare the plan of action and the two-page paper. Number two, present the plan of action and the paper to all the necessary people on your team, pastor, deacons, elders, key leaders, even some of your key kids. Ask them to give you the freedom to carry out this dream. Go with a loving servant attitude. Share your burden for the younger generation. Show the needs of your community and your church. And then present the paper as the answer to those needs. Number three, pray in a prayer triplet with two other youth leaders at a campus near you. Number four, mobilize your church around awesome way to pray. Number five, follow through on the relationship forgiveness issues that God brought to your mind before. If there are several issues, deal with one situation at a time. Number six, present Jesus-focused youth ministry to your volunteers and parents on a retreat. That can be in someone's home or it can be a retreat away, however it works best for you. Number seven, out of that retreat, begin a leadership team. That will lead to discipling students, penetrating the campus, and creating outreach events. And number eight, contact our website to let us know how you're doing and how we can assist you, because we really, really want to help you. Well, now that you've listened through all this, probably you've already begun to implement some of it, it's time to take a risk. It's time to pray and plan in a way that if God doesn't do this, it's doomed to failure. My hope, my prayer for you is that because God is in it, it will find ultimate success, that in your ministry you will have a Jesus-focused youth ministry.